We are back. You're listening to You Would Think, the Philly Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington. Joining me, as always, it's Mike Gilletto.
What up? What up?
What's up? Now, I'm here to let you guys know you can follow the show on Twitter at YWT Podcast. You can follow me at K Collington, Mike at Mike underscore Gilletto. And you can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, and lastwordonsports.com. Now, we got a lot to talk about today.
We do.
We got some Phillies news to talk about. We have the resolution of the Brian Colangelo saga. Yep. And there's a Stanley Cup champion.
There is a new Stanley Cup champion.
Alexander Ovechkin finally got his cup. And we're going to get into that in the back half of the show. But let's start with some Phillies talk.
Real quick, before we jump into Phillies talk.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Before we jump into Phillies talk.
Starting early, huh?
It's been a while since we've said this. And I just want to remind the listeners out there, the Philadelphia Eagles are Super Bowl champions. It's been a while since we've said it. Had to be said.
That's fair.
All right, go ahead.
Did I start you off strong. Your game? We're starting strong today. I was just kind of getting into the groove, and
it had to be said. It's been a while since we've recognized that they are Super Bowl champions. Yeah. I thought maybe some people forgot.
Oh, so. Yeah. Anyway, Phillies news. Phillies are starting to turn it around a little bit. Not quite as dismal as last week.
Well, I mean, they still lost, I think, 7 of the last 8, something like that. They broke a 4-game losing streak.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing the worst of the Phillies, I think.
Yeah.
And if this is the worst they are, then I think we're okay.
But, yeah, that's kind of, I mean, it's what people expected, though, right? For them to compete, be right around 500, but, you know, by the time the season's over, maybe compete for a playoff spot.
And the big pieces of this team are still kind of learning to play together. So, you know, it'll take a little bit of time, and, you know, maybe we're seeing the slump effect here. And, you know, if it turns around, you make a playoff spot, you're not out of it yet. So, yeah. You know.
But, I mean, it seems like things didn't get any better after the Giants series, where they only scored one run off of a Jake Arrieta home run. They only scored one run that series. Yeah. Then they lose 2 out of 3 against the Cubs, and then they lose 2 out of 3 against the Brewers. And in the two games they lost, they gave up a combined total of 24 runs.
Yep, that's
in 2 games. It's not good.
That's not what you want.
No.
Anyway, so that's kind of where the Phillies are at this point. And we move a little closer to the All-Star game and the trade deadline. And maybe they make a move at the trade deadline. But
maybe they start a 3-game? Yeah, 3-game set with the Rockies tomorrow night. So
Tuesday night. Yeah.
Yep, Tuesday night.
Yeah, and you know, for now, until a move is made, the Phillies kind of are what they are. And you're kind of stuck with the team you got. There's not a ton of moves you can make, you know, unless you're going to start making trades and stuff like that. So,
right.
You know, we'll see where the Phillies go. Aaron Nola looks like he's going to be an all-star.
Yeah.
And we'll figure that out in about a month. But as for right now, you know.
I mean, they're in a race. They're 3 games behind the Nationals and the Braves.
Yeah, plenty
of
time.
Who are tied. But
if you're 3 games out in, you know, mid-June, you're in good shape.
Yeah.
So,
and I don't think anybody's calling for Kapler's head at this point like they were a week into the season.
No, and if you add a guy like Machado or one of these big names, you're a contender instantly. Yeah. Instantly.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Right? You got your Santana, you got your Arrieta. You throw in a guy like Manny Machado, and this team is instantly the favorite for the pennant, or at least for the division.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, and probably a contender for the pennant right away.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. I mean, there's things to be optimistic about for sure for this Phillies team.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Anything else you wanted to say about the Phillies before we transition away here? There's really not much to say.
Not really. Not really this week.
Sir Anthony Dominguez is still playing really well.
He is. He finally gave up his, you know, first runs as a major leaguer. He gave up two. What was it? Two on, well, I forget. Friday or Saturday, he gave up two.
Well, every streak ends sometimes.
But it wasn't even like really his fault. Like they got earned to him. But somebody else gave up the runs, and then on Sunday he finally gave up his first actual like earned run. But
well, you know, we expected that.
Yeah, he can't be perfect forever, right?
It'd be nice.
Yeah, wouldn't it be?
But
to find our Mariano Rivera.
Sure.
It's weird how they're using Dominguez though. Like he's supposed to be their closer, basically. Like it seems like they're trying to transition him into the role, but I see him a lot of times pitching, you know, 7th innings. You're coming in the 7th, coming in the 8th, instead of the sure fire, let's go to him in the 9th, he's our lights out guy.
Well, yeah, but if you don't trust the rest of your bullpen to get you to the 9th in a save situation, you got to use him where you need him.
Right.
Right. And if the seventh inning is the most important inning, then I want him out there for the seventh inning.
Yeah, I you guess.
Know, the Phillies aren't good enough to just say, yeah, we're going to get to the ninth with a two-run lead.
Right. Because right? you don't know if you're going to get to the ninth with right. a two-run lead.
The
right.
The bullpen is sketchy enough that you just need him to come in and put out fires.
Yeah.
So he's not, I don't think he's going to be a designated closer for this team probably until next year.
Think so.
Right. But as of okay. right, as of right now, he can close. And, you know, if a situation comes up where you get a lead, you know, you come back from two runs down and get a lead going into the ninth, great. Throw him out there. Let him get the save.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's going to be your designated closer probably till next year.
You think so? I mean, maybe it's possible.
At this point, he's kind of just a fireman. He comes in, he puts out fires.
Yeah. He's pitching his ass off. He pumps it up there, at, you know, 97, 98-ish. And then, his changeup is just filthy.
Yeah, and once he transitions into that closer role, he's probably going to be very, very good in it.
Yeah.
But as of right now, I want to see him, because he's so young, I want to see him get experience in all different innings. Right?
No, I agree with that.
I don't necessarily want to have him locked into he can only come in the ninth. So, yeah. You know. I like the little bit of exposure that he's getting in the earlier innings.
Yeah. I mean, their defense still is struggling. Kingery doesn't have a shortstop's arm.
No.
No,
I would say he'll probably end up transitioning to second base at some point in his career.
Yeah, then what do you do with Cesar Hernandez? Because Hernandez is their everyday second baseman.
I know.
Maybe, and he's playing really well.
Maybe you play Hernandez at short. He's got a little bit of a better arm than Kingery, I would say.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. He's not really a shortstop either, though. Maybe you use Hernandez in a trade to get Machado.
We've talked Kingery over. We've
talked
about Cesar Hernandez being one of those pieces that we could see moving.
Yeah.
Because Kingery is a natural second baseman.
Yeah, so then that would actually work out perfectly because you slide Kingery over to second, put Machado in his natural position as short.
Right.
So maybe that works out. I mean, you'd obviously have to give up more than Cesar Hernandez for that trade to go through.
A little bit, yeah.
But
either way, it's a piece. But I think out of the current lineup, I would say that Cesar Hernandez is one of the pieces that'll go.
Yeah.
Another piece that could go, I could see them moving Rhys Hoskins.
And I'm not
necessarily saying they should, but he's struggling a little bit this year. And when you signed Santana, you're blocking his path at his natural position, first base. Right?
Yeah. So
maybe you're doing that because you can see him leaving.
Right.
And I don't know the Phillies prospect pool well enough to know if they have other first basemen coming up, maybe in 2 or 3 years when Santana's on his way out. But as of right now, Hoskins is kind of extra. He's struggling in the outfield. He's not doing amazing at the dish. Maybe he's the extra piece while the value is still high on him.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't think they will, though. But that's just me.
Maybe not, but then he's just going to be stuck behind Santana for 2 full years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you're not really he's not really on the team to be in the field, essentially. Like he's here for the bat, so yeah, you could kind of put him anywhere.
But the Phillies are a National League team.
No, yeah, I understand but a left fielder, it doesn't need to be a great defender.
Pat Burrell proved that for
exactly.
About a decade.
He made the transfer from first to left. So
Raul Ibanez,
right? I mean, you don't
prove that.
And yeah, nobody looks at those guys for their glove.
Into the outfield,
yeah, sure.
Right? Like it's not out of the realm of possibility that you can Rhys Hoskins transfers to the outfield, has his little bit of an adjustment period, and succeeds. Like that could happen, but the guy is a natural first baseman, and the Santana signing interests me because if you think Rhys Hoskins is your first baseman of the future, right? If you think he's your next Ryan Howard, it seems silly to sign somebody designed to block his path.
Yeah. That signing was kind of weird in that aspect, but
right. Like if you remember Jim Thome's last year, that was the year that Ryan Howard was breaking out.
Right.
And they actually did a really good job. Charlie Manuel at the time did a really good job of the season started with Thome getting most of the reps and Howard being a pinch hit guy or funnily enough, a defensive replacement because he was so young at the time.
Right.
And then as the season wore on, they moved into more of a true platoon role where they would kind of almost alternate days.
And you might see that in the second half of the season, just because like Santana, he's been a hot mess of late. I mean, he still got some power, some pop, but I mean, his stats are not good at all.
I don't know though. Now it might almost be disruptive if you put Hoskins back in a first base platoon.
Right.
Because if he's going to be an outfielder, then he needs to learn how to be an outfielder. And you can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't do that if you're switching back and forth every day.
Right.
And I honestly think Santana is going to be fine once the interleague play really kicks up and once he gets a lot of reps as your DH, because he's going to be your DH.
Yeah, probably. But then who do you move to first? Because, I mean, Hoskins probably,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a whole mess. And I like the Santana signing, but it just doesn't make sense with Hoskins on the roster.
Right.
Like, it just doesn't.
Because, they knew who they had in Hoskins after last year.
You know, the second half
of the season. I mean, you knew that he was a part of the team moving forward.
Right. You thought you had something special here, but you never knew for sure.
And you still don't know.
No, you don't. He's still young enough that he could tank it out, you know, next month and just be done and never play Major League Baseball again.
Right. But... All right, moving on. The MLB draft was this week also. I'm not going to talk you about all these prospects because truthfully, nobody really knows how these guys are going to pan out.
Quite frankly, I would say that the MLB draft is the most irrelevant of the four major sports.
Unless you're getting a guy like Mike Trout.
Who's once in a decade.
Right. But, I mean, we'll just acknowledge.
Who was the last slam dunk number one pick before Mike Trout?
I'd have to go back and look. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know the answer.
Whereas in the NFL...
Bryce Harper, maybe?
Maybe. But if you look at the NFL, there's a true number one every year. In the NHL, you know, recent years, you've had your Connor McDavid and your Austin Matthews and your, you know, all these players recently, and especially in the NHL, they're jumping in right away.
Right.
The NFL, they can jump in right away. The stars can step onto an opening day lineup. Baseball...
Take some years.
At least the first season. It's also the only sport where the draft is in the middle of the season, which is weird.
It's weird.
And there's actually a guy who makes YouTube videos. I don't know if you've ever heard of Matt Antonelli.
I have not, no.
Okay, so he makes YouTube videos. He was a number one pick for the Padres in 06 and kind of bounced around the minor league system. And he came up for like 20 games and he spent a bunch of time hurt. He ended up flaming out. 2014, 2012, something like that.
Okay.
And he makes YouTube videos and he talks about being a major league player and blah, blah, blah. And he made a video about the process of coming up and you get drafted. The agent was at his house the next day trying to sign his contract.
Right.
And then like 2 weeks later, he reported to rookie ball. There's a league for
specifically for rookies.
Guys who just got drafted. It's short season. It's
right
called.
because the draft in the MLB is like 70 rounds or right. Something absurd.
Yeah, it's insane.
But they actually did agree to terms, and the draft was last week. But their first round pick, third overall, Alec Baum, third baseman from Wichita State.
I'm sorry, Baum.
Baum. Boom.
Is it?
B-O-H-M.
Boom. It's Boom. Probably Boom.
Boom. Bomb.
I mean, you know there's going to be people calling him Bomb if he's hitting bombs.
Right. Exactly. Alec Baum. That's a good name.
All right. But, hit me with the stats. You said Wichita State?
Yeah. Third baseman from Wichita State. He was widely tabbed as a top 10 prospect.
Okay.
So they got him third overall. So
you're in the realm. Right.
But he's kind of been... They're talking about him being a top flight hitting prospect, which is good. He's got a lot of pop. He's got discipline. He's got, you know, substantial raw power. So power is something that he could use. I mean, you're probably not going to see this guy for 3 to 5 years at the minimum. But
the way you've built your team, that might work out.
Right.
Right. Even if Santana's gone, you're still going to have Franco if you want him. You're still going to have Hoskins if you want him.
Well, at that time, you could probably move on from Franco because he's a third baseman. So
right. This guy might be your successor to Michael Franco.
Right.
And that's fine. And Franco is a great hitter. But he's not so much a power hitting third baseman.
No, he was a flash in the pan kind of thing.
But generally speaking, he's much more of a contact third baseman. He's a good two hole third baseman. He's not really a four spot third baseman.
No, he's not.
So if this guy can develop into an actual power hitting third baseman, we're in good shape.
Yeah.
Because the Phillies organization has had a hole at third base for a long time.
Since
Schmidt.
I would say Scott Rolen.
Since Schmidt. But Rolen wasn't here long enough to...
That's probably the best, the last really good third baseman they've had.
And I think after that, it was David Bell.
Yeah.
You remember that name?
Oh, God.
I think he was the third baseman on the World Series team.
No.
I think so.
No
Look it up.
I'm going to look this up.
The Phillies have had a hole at third baseman since Mike Schmidt. And if this kid is the real deal, you know, and getting a guy third overall, you expect him to contribute to your organization one day, then, you know, it's a good spot. And if he can be an MLB third baseman, even if he's not Mike Schmidt, right? Because nobody expects him to be Mike Schmidt. But if he can be a good everyday player, if he can bat 250, hit 25 home runs, knock in 90 RBIs, can't complain about that.
Pedro Feliz.
Oh, Jesus. That's even worse.
That was their third baseman.
That might be worse than David Bell.
Yeah.
All right. I would say that's enough baseball talk for the day. We have a lot of hockey to get into, but before we get into that, the end of the very, very strange Brian Colangelo saga. And we're going to try to get through this in 7 or 6 minutes or less.
We're going to
get through it pretty easily. Basically, the Sixers didn't fire him.
They fired him. It's not what they're calling it, but they fired him.
Right. Colangelo stepped down.
He, quote unquote, resigned.
Yeah. He removed himself from the situation.
Yeah.
He quit.
Which I'm kind of surprised that that didn't happen as soon as this stuff came out.
Yeah. I think once it if that was the way they were going to go, right? If the Sixers weren't going to fire him, and if they were going to go with a, hey, we're going to let you resign type of thing, why didn't they have the conversation 12 hours after the news broke?
Right.
Right. Because at that point, he had to know that they were going to blow it up. Right. It was very clear, if you were on Twitter at all, that Twitter knew that he did it. Twitter knew it was him. Yeah.
Well,
or his wife.
I was going to say, apparently it wasn't him.
Yeah, he's still denying that it was him.
He is. I mean, I have, he released some, you know, a whole statement, but I just want to read a little excerpt from, you know, from this whole thing.
That's a good word. I'm very proud of you, Mike.
Thank you. You don't have to, you know, bash me in front of this, our listening audience.
The correct term is patronize, Mike.
Patronize, whatever.
There you go. Whatever. Look at you learning new things today.
Anyway. He says, her actions were seriously misguided effort to publicly defend and support me. And while I recognize how inappropriate these actions were, she acted independently and without my knowledge or consent. So
that's the funniest thing I've heard all day.
He is bad. Like he's just thrown under the bus at this point. When did the divorce papers come in? Do you think
they're not going to?
I don't know.
If anything, she's going to divorce him. No, it's.
I mean, the thing is, like, do you think he knew? Or you think that's just a front?
Yes, Mike. 100, yes.
If he knew, then they're both dopes.
Yeah, how are you even, like, do you even ask that question?
It's just a question of course you have he knew. To ask.
Of course he knew.
I mean, because we don't know.
Listen, if she had one fake Twitter account, okay, maybe he doesn't know about it. But five?
Yeah.
The maintenance behind 5 Twitter accounts? Come on.
I know. Listen, it's a question that just has to be asked.
Yeah. No.
I agree with you. I think you have to know.
100% he knew about it. 100% he thought it wouldn't get discovered. And 100% he's an absolute idiot.
Yep.
So, yeah, Brian Colangelo will never work in basketball again.
You don't think so?
No.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that.
Not at this level. Maybe he can go get an assistant coaching job somewhere. Right. But he's never going to be anywhere near a front office again.
No, he can't be trusted.
No, like, exactly.
It's that simple.
Because if it was his wife, right? If it actually wasn't him, let's give BC the benefit of the doubt for a second. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't him, then that means he believed so strongly in all these things that he went home and talked to his wife about it. His wife, if his wife heard the information from him, then that's how she formed her opinions that were expressed via these Twitter accounts.
He even denies giving her any of this information, which
is
bogus. I know.
How does that work?
It doesn't.
The information that was revealed on these accounts, nobody knew except for him.
Right.
So how does she know? If we didn't know it by reading it in the paper or online or whatever, she knows because she's literally in bed with the GM.
Like, literally.
Just literally shares a bed with the man. And, like, he had to know.
Yep.
She had to know. He had to know. It got blown up. They got exposed. Brian Colangelo should never work in basketball again.
Yeah, and he probably won't.
Or any other sport, for that matter.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Have him go work for FIFA. They have their share of confidentiality issues.
Yeah, FIFA's a whole other story, but we're not a soccer podcast, so I'm not going to get down that rabbit hole.
Well, we're not a basketball cast either, Mike.
That's true. Not what a basketball cast.
So Alex Ovechkin won the Stanley Cup.
He did.
We're just going to transition hard into hockey.
Yeah,
here.
We're not even going to acknowledge that there was a sweep in the NBA Finals. We're not even going to acknowledge that.
I mean, you just kind of did.
I did, but whatever.
So, we're not. No. Anyway, Alexander Ovechkin won the Stanley Cup.
I'm happy for him.
Now, if you guys missed it, I don't know how you missed it if you're listening to this podcast, but the Washington Capitals won the Stanley Cup Finals in 5 games.
Yep. I'm a complete mush. I said Vegas in 5.
I know. I know.
I'm a complete mush.
I mean, Ben and myself both said Vegas in 6. So, you know, after game 1, we all felt good about our picks,
yeah.
Right? Vegas won that game. And then Alexander Ovechkin realized where he was and said, yep. Hold my beer.
Vegas,
I got this.
Vegas loses 4 games in a row and the first time in franchise history.
Yeah. That's insane.
It's the wrong place to do it.
The first time you lose 4 in a row in franchise history, yep, is in the Stanley Cup Finals. That's
a rough time to do it.
It's outrageous. First time in franchise history.
Yep.
Do you remember when the Flyers lost 10 straight this year?
Yeah, that is true.
Like,
yep.
They didn't even do a third of that.
No.
It's outrageous.
It's insane.
Vegas has absolutely nothing to be ashamed of.
No, absolutely not. They've had a magical, historic season.
It was unreal.
Yeah.
The Vegas run, like, is Disney making the movie about it yet?
They're going to.
It can't take long.
No. The script's already written, like,
yeah. And game 5, and Washington was down in that game.
Yeah,
they
that was
were
a
down
hell of a game.
They were down 3-2 at the end of the second period.
Right.
Game five was the best hockey game I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it was a good one. It had everything, really.
Game 5 was literally the best hockey game I've ever seen in my life. If you haven't seen it, track it down. Watch the whole game.
Yeah, I'm sure you can find it on NHL Network. I'm sure they're playing replays of
it. I'm sure they are. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing. Every time the Capitals scored, after they showed the replay, they showed Ovechkin.
Uh-huh.
It was his reaction, yep, to everything.
Yep.
And in the third period, you could just see him, like, grabbing his head. He had his head down on the
boards.
He
was into it.
He was so nervous. He was so anxious. You could tell he wanted it so bad.
And then, of course, in perfect Vegas fashion, you know, they love their theatrics. The clock decides to stop working in the final minute.
Oh, what was that?
I don't know.
2 minutes left, all of a sudden the clock goes absolutely haywire, blacks out for at least 30 seconds.
Yep.
Then it's showing the wrong time. Then it blacks out again.
Unreal.
Absolutely incredible. Like, you know, Toronto was watching it going, oh my God.
What the hell is
going
on?
What are we
going
to do?
Right.
Like, what happens if Vegas scores?
Yeah.
When,
and
like,
nobody knows how much time's left.
Right.
But it was just
unreal.
It was a great game. And, I mean, Ovechkin's, he's living his life right now. Like he did you see him at the Washington Nationals game doing keg stands out of the cup?
Out of the cup.
It was,
yeah. I was just going to ask if you saw that.
It's terrific.
Okay. They won the Stanley Cup in Las Vegas.
They did.
What did the Vegas clubs look like that night, man?
Oh, yeah. There were videos of, going around of Ovechkin by the, on stage with next to some DJ, just holding up the cup, just going nuts.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I don't know if any other Capitals has gotten a chance to touch it. Like, I think Ovi just took it and said, mine.
It's mine.
Mine.
He deserves it. I mean, he had a hell of a playoff.
Yep.
He's had a hell of a career. Yeah, he deserves it. I mean, the Conn Smythe, I think he deserved that as well.
Yeah.
I know some people are talking about Kuznetsov, but I think it was Ovi's to win no matter what, no matter if the Capitals won, Ovechkin was getting it, mainly just because of name factor.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that. Like, I don't agree with the decision. I think he deserved it, but I think Holtby probably deserved it more.
Nah, I disagree with Holtby. I think Kuznetsov deserved it. If there was anybody other than Ovechkin that was getting it, it was Kuznetsov.
Yeah, that's fair.
But just because Holtby, while there were a couple games that he saved, like game two, which turned the whole series around, the final seconds of game two. Other than that, he looked hit or miss. He was mediocre sometimes. And then great others. And even if, say this series went six or seven, right? And Washington still won. And every game was a 2-1, 1-0 game. Real hard fought. I would have been hard-pressed to give it to Fleury.
Yeah. Yeah, but honestly, if this series... It's weird to say that this series didn't feel close. Because most of the games were tight. Right?
Yeah, they were
all one-goal games except for game four.
Three?
One of them was 6-2.
That was game three, yeah.
Every other game was a one-goal game. So it's outrageous to say that the series didn't feel close. But after that game three win...
I'm sorry, that was game four. Game one was the Knights won by two. Then every game was a one-goal game except for game four where they won 6-2, correct?
Yeah, after that game, though, it kind of felt inevitable. Like, even if Vegas had pulled off game five, you just never got the feeling that they were going to win a game six in Washington.
No, in Washington, absolutely not.
Right. But I do actually want to talk about one of the greatest traditions in hockey.
Okay.
And that's passing the cup.
It is insane.
It's absolutely insane. So if you guys don't know, there's this myth around the Stanley Cup that you don't touch it until you've won it. And there are all sorts of horror stories about, you know, guys who've touched it and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the cup gets handed to the captain, in this case, Ovi, which is clear. And he had his moment. He raised it above his head. He screamed. He went all out. And there was a little bit of a question as to who was getting it second.
I think it made sense where it went.
Yeah. But there was a little bit of a question. Would he go to Holtby? Would he go to... You know, there was a couple different contenders for who gets the cup first, you know, after Ovi gets it. And he ended up making the absolute right move and passing it to Nicklas Backstrom.
Yeah.
And I think that was perfect.
I think so too, because he's a guy that's been next to Ovi for a long time, has been through the same struggles, the same, you know, sort of talk of, oh, these guys can never win. These guys can and never will win.
If, like, they are as inseparable as any duo in the NHL today, right? They've played on the same line for the last decade.
10 years?
Right. Yeah. Like, they've gone up together. They've gone down together. Backstrom has got an A. Ovi's got the C. They've gone through every single hardship. They've gone through every single second-round loss. And, boy, there were a lot of them.
Yeah.
And it absolutely was incredible that he passed it to Backstrom. He let Backstrom have his moment. And then they had their moment together.
They did, yeah.
And it was really, really good. And it's just, it's one of my favorite traditions in sports.
It is. No, I like it a lot. Yeah.
Because, and the one that always sticks in my mind was a couple years ago, Jonathan Toews passing it to Kimmo Tiimonen.
Yeah.
The Flyers traded Tiimonen at the deadline.
Was his chance to get the cup.
The day he got cleared after being out for 9 months with blood clots, Flyers were nowhere near the playoffs, and Hextall did... Was that Hextall or was that still Homer?
When was this? 14?
14. I think it was Hextall.
I think it was Hextall, yeah.
And he did the right thing and traded Tiimonen into a team that could go win the cup. Ended up getting a third round pick for a guy who hasn't touched the puck.
Was it a third? I think it was like 2/4, which still is insane.
I think it was conditional and it ended up going to a third.
Okay.
And for a guy who hasn't touched the ice in like 11 months.
Right.
Anyway. And that one hit me really hard. Like, I got some hardcore goosebumps watching that. Because you could see Toews. He took the cup. He raised it above his head. And the first thing he did was turn around and look for Kimmo Tiimonen. Handed it to Tiimonen. Tiimonen raised it, went, yeah! And then tried to hand it off. And every Blackhawks...
said, no, this is your moment.
Skated back and held their hands up like, no. You're taking a lap with this.
Yeah.
Because Kimmo Tiimonen was widely considered the best player to not have a cup at that point. He was one of those guys.
Yeah, I'm not ready to call him like a Hall of Famer. I don't think he's that point. But
I think he's probably a Hall of Famer.
He's borderline.
He's not jersey retirement, but he's Hall of Fame.
Maybe, but that was a heartwarming moment, and which is weird because like in Philly, I mean, I'm not one of them, but in this area, a lot of people hate Chicago.
I am one of them.
So
yeah.
So to see a guy like Taves, who you probably hate, do that probably was a little weird for you.
Yeah, that was the only time in my entire life I've rooted for Chicago or supported Jonathan Taves in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
It was definitely strange.
Yeah.
But it was worth it. He earned a little bit of respect in that moment.
Right. But back to the Washington celebration. Did you see? They were doing their lap with the cup, and there was a girl behind the net flashing.
Yeah,
it's great. Anyway, then Burakovsky pointed to her, "Hey, I see you."
So Ovi passed it to Backstrom. Backstrom passed it to Brooks Orpik. Who, you know, that's again, I like that. That's a good move.
He was the only one to win his second cup with his team.
He was
the only one with multiple cups.
Cup experience. Yeah. And then it went to Matt Niskanen, who's kind of been there forever.
I don't want to use the word forever. He's been there for a while.
He's been there for his whole career, and he's been around for a while. So
he was there his whole career, was he? Wasn't he in Pittsburgh before that?
Maybe. I don't know. And then it went to TJ Oshie.
Can I talk about TJ Oshie?
I was just about to say, you saw that interview?
Yeah, I cried like a 5-year-old child watching that thing.
Yeah, that's not a surprise. You cry a lot.
Whatever. So. You know, it was an emotional thing.
TJ Oshie's dad has Alzheimer's.
Yep.
It's been diagnosed fairly recently. And TJ Oshie said something along the lines of, you know, there's not much my dad remembers anymore, but I guarantee you he remembers this.
Right. This one will stick with him.
This one will stick
forever.
With him.
Right.
And I think all their families were there, and I think his dad was probably there. Right.
Yeah. I would imagine. You would think.
So it's, you would think. So it was a really heartwarming story.
Yeah, it was.
And like, I'm not the biggest TJ Oshie fan, and we're going to get into this in a little bit. The Capitals are a division rival for the Philadelphia Flyers. And we're going to get into this in a little bit.
I guess to a degree they are, yeah.
Right. So, you know, you kind of hate them just because they're good and they're in your division and you got to play them.
Yeah, but they don't really give the same mustard as the Penguins or the Devils or the Rangers.
They've also only been in the division for like 3 years.
Yeah,
so give it time.
Right.
But it was nice to see Oshie lift the cup and have his moment for his... You know, for him and himself and his dad.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that was tough to watch, too, because he was having trouble getting words out.
He was choked up. Yeah. And then he passed it to Jay Beagle, who became, I think, the first player.
He's the first player ever to win the cup at the ECHL level, the AHL level, and the NHL.
Yeah, that's a cool story.
Yeah, because not a lot of people, like, that shows how much he grinded out, right?
And you and I have talked a little bit. On the show and also off the show about the ECHL.
It's a joke.
And how it kind of doesn't usually matter. And players very rarely make it to the NHL from the ECHL.
Yeah.
Jay Beagle not only made it from the ECHL, he made it to the top of the mountain in the NHL.
Yep.
And you got to give him credit for that.
Yeah. Yeah, that just shows the work that he put in to get to where he had to go. I mean, to just completely grind from the ECHL to the AHL to
NHL. He's been a cap for, you know, he's been in the Capitals organization for 10 years.
Has he really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And he's an unrestricted free agent. They don't anticipate re-signing him.
Now, they have a lot of decisions to make, whether they want to, I mean, sign him, but probably not. I mean, they have Oshie signed for the next, like, 7 years at, like $7 or $8 million, something absurd.
That contract's going to turn sour.
And then they still have to decide whether they can afford John Carlson.
Well, that's actually who Beagle passed it to. So I was actually just going to get into that.
There you go.
Beagle passed it to John Carlson, who is a free agent this offseason.
He's going to get paid.
Who many people don't think that they're going to be able to re-sign.
Yeah.
They just don't have the money.
Yeah, if they do, they're going to have to get creative and move some cap somewhere else.
Yeah, they're going to have to start rearranging deals and trading some people. Philip Grubauer's got to go. I think he might also be a free agent.
Grubauer?
Yeah.
I don't remember. He's got 1 year left, the other.
Well, and he's going to want to go start somewhere.
Is he good enough, though? I don't know if he's a good enough goaltender.
He played
to start.
Really well down the stretch. He stole the job from Holtby for the last 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, but their team's good, obviously. They just won the cup. So I don't know if that's Grubauer or if that's...
I would rather have Philip Grubauer than any of the goalies that the Flyers have. I'd rather have him over Mrazek, Elliott, Neuwirth.
I don't know if I would rather have him over Elliott. The other two I'll give you.
In a heartbeat. He's more consistent than Elliott.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
You're just saying that. That's recency bias.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, John Carlson is a free agent this offseason.
Yep, I made up my mind. I want John Carlson. He's our number one priority, the Flyers.
Well, congratulations. I'm glad you're the one who makes those decisions.
Yep, I am.
I think Vegas is going to get him.
Do you? No, I disagree.
Vegas has $32 million in cap space.
I disagree. You know, you want to know what Vegas is going to do? At the draft, they're going to call the Ottawa Senators and say, hey, let's make a deal for Erik Karlsson. That's what's going to happen.
I don't think so. I think they're going to sign Tavares and Karlsson. Yeah. Think about how good that team is. They got the cap space. They can offer both of them $15 million and still have a little bit of wiggle room.
Right.
And, like, I'm not saying they're going to do that.
I don't think they will.
I think they're going to put strong offers in on both of them.
Ah, God, it's tough.
Think about that.
Yep.
This team just made the cup final. They have $30 million in cap space this offseason with two huge free agents on the market.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
And
I never even thought of them to get those two.
And they're exempt from the Seattle draft when the Seattle team comes in.
But that draft's probably not going to be for a few years.
Probably two years. Yeah, I would say that draft probably happens in the summer of 2020.
Right.
With them starting play in the fall of 2020.
Right.
Just based on where they're at in the bidding process, and they've sold some tickets, and they have a venue that's being worked on.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're a franchise by 2020.
Yeah. I think that's a good time frame to put them at.
Yeah, and that's going to be really exciting. I think the Pacific Northwest needs something. Because right now, all they have is the Seahawks and the Mariners.
Yeah.
So, you know,
at least Seattle.
Level.
Yeah, I mean, you said the Northwest. I mean, they still have Vancouver, which is a five-minute walk. Like,
that's fair. But regardless, congratulations to Alexander Ovechkin.
Absolutely.
And the whole Washington Capitals team.
Yeah.
We're actually going to use this to transition into a talk about Alexander Ovechkin's legacy. Now, he was a first ballot, lock it up Hall of Famer.
Absolutely. There's no denying that. Yeah.
It's unanimous now. He walked.
It was unanimous before, but I understand what you're saying because he was.
Somebody might have said, well, he never won a title.
Yeah, he was
and
kind
wait
of.
Wait until the second year.
He was in the Dan Marino conversation of right. the best to never win.
The best athletes to never win a cup. Right.
But no. I mean, he might be the greatest pure goal scorer of all time. He's certainly the best goal scorer that I've ever seen play the game.
Yeah, he's the best goal scorer of this century, really. That's an easy cutoff because Gretzky retired before the end of the century.
Yeah, you still had Solani who.
Stop it.
No, Solani was a terrific goal scorer.
I understand that, but he's no Ovi.
I mean, he did put up 72 in his rookie season. Like,
yeah, before goalies started playing the butterfly.
What do you mean before we start playing butterfly?
Anyway, so Alexander Ovechkin hits that weird line where you hate him because he's really, really good and you have to play him and you have to see him and he beats you all the time. Although, fun fact, Flyers won 3 out of 4 against the Capitals this year.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, who's the real champ here?
Clearly the Washington Capitals.
Still them. Yeah, it's still them. Alexander Ovechkin crosses that line of you hate him, but you respect him.
See, the thing, I don't even hate him.
I hate him on the ice because he just does that thing where he goes and stands in the slot on the power play. He makes you forget about him, and then he rips one by your goalie at 110 miles an hour.
Because he's a great hockey player.
Yes. I completely 100% acknowledge that it's because he's a great hockey player.
Yeah.
He crosses that line for me. Some other players that have crossed that line in the past. Martin Brodeur.
Absolutely. I love Brodeur.
I hated him his entire
playing. One of the best goalies ever.
I hated him his entire playing career because he gave the Flyers fits. The day he retired, he crossed the line, right? He crossed over into, I respect him. I now acknowledge how good he was.
That was a little different because I acknowledge he is one of the greatest goaltenders ever.
Yeah.
Definitely one of the greatest that I've seen play.
But at the same time, I absolutely hated him in the early 2000s.
I don't hate Ovechkin. I actually like Ovechkin and I respect what he did. I hated Brodeur when he played because he was a constant Flyer killer.
Yeah.
Like, Ovechkin hasn't really done that to the Flyers, so maybe that's why I don't really so much hate towards him.
Well, that's only because in the early part of his career, the Flyers weren't making the playoffs every year. And then he's only been in the division for like 3 years.
Right. But like, so I don't really hate him. But like Brodeur.
For example, the the captain who shall remain unnamed out in Pittsburgh. He won't ever cross the line. I acknowledge that he's a great hockey player. Yeah. He will never, ever, ever cross that line for me. I will hate him until eternity.
Well, that's actually where I was headed to next. He's a player that when he came up, I hated him. He was a crybaby. He had no respect from anybody, no respect from me. I despised him. Just the thought of his name, I would just cringe.
Yeah.
He's getting to the point where I'm starting to respect him.
No.
Just because, one, he's the greatest. He's top three hockey player of all time. Like, I'm just going to say that. He's top three of all time.
That's a tough thing to say.
It is. Definitely top five. I'd probably put him top three.
I don't know if I can go top three.
He's definitely top five. But then, I mean, just the way that he's kind of, he gets it, right? He doesn't really whine, bitch, moan anymore. He plays the game 110.
Except literally all the time. No, he doesn't. Okay.
He's constantly going. He hits everything that moves. Oh, Sidney Crosby, I'm starting to have respect for.
Nah, he's still spearing people in the groin, and slashing off Mark Messot's finger.
Everybody slashes.
No respect.
Everybody slashes.
No respect. Yeah, that's fair. Everybody slashes.
Yes.
Hockey's a rough game. Hockey's a physical game. Everybody else, when they do that, they know they have to answer the bell. He knows that he'll never have to drop the gloves as a consequence for his actions.
No. I don't understand that argument, though.
That changes it for me, right? Even going back to the pests of the last generation, the Darius Kasparaitis, the Matthew Barnaby, those guys, they knew that they were going to get roughed around, and they knew that sometimes they would have to drop the gloves and fight back.
Okay.
This guy,
Barnaby, Domi, and who is it? Kasparaitis are no Sidney Crosby.
Listen,
they're not the most elite player in the league.
I understand. I didn't say the elite players. The pests of yesteryear knew that if they were going to play a dirty game, and even going into your current day, your Brad Marchand, your whoever, you know that if you take a dirty shot at somebody, if you slash somebody across the finger, if you spear somebody in the groin, you have to answer the bell. And this guy never has to answer the bell.
Okay.
That's my problem.
It's a different game,
though.
We talked about it last week with the whole the way the enforcer's gone in the NHL. They just don't exist anymore. Like, it's a different game.
There's a difference between being an enforcer and answering the bell. Like,
He's the greatest player in the game, where, you know, his players are going to stick up for him if somebody does want him to answer the bell. A guy like Domi or Kasparaitis or Barnaby, they have nobody that's going to stick up for them. They have to stick up for themselves because they're not an elite player.
I understand that. Listen, I'm not saying that he's not an elite player. I'm saying that I have no respect for the guy.
I'm starting to. He just plays 200 feet game.
I respect Malkin more than
Malkin is an absolute scumbag.
I understand that, but there was that incident where he took a run at, I believe, Blake Wheeler.
Who, Malkin?
Yeah.
Okay.
He knocked him out, or he took a high hit on him and he ran at him. Next time they played, 3 minutes into the game, he dropped the gloves with him.
Yeah.
He answered the bell.
Mm-hmm.
He stood up. He didn't have to fight Wheeler at that point. That game was 3 weeks prior. Wheeler came up to him early in the game, said, "Last time we played, you hit me dirty. I want to fight you." And Malkin said, "I know I hit you dirty. I'll give you the fight."
Okay.
The other guy never does that. You're never going to have that conversation with the other guy. He's going to go, "Oh, that was 3 weeks ago. We're done here." And skate away.
Because Sidney Crosby doesn't have to. And Malkin is 100% a dirtier player than Sidney Crosby.
That's fine, but he's willing to defend himself. He's willing to acknowledge when he's done dirty things and come back and answer. Stop it.
Yes, yes.
Stop.
I'm going to go on hockeyfights.com. That's a real website.
I know it is.
I've looked it up.
Listen, that doesn't mean no. Because look at the people he's fought. Malkin will fight anybody if he has to answer the bell. The other clown fights your top star. He'll fight your John Tavares. He'll fight your Claude Giroux. He'll fight your guy who also doesn't fight. Stop it. Don't give me that as an excuse. He's an absolute joke. I don't respect him in the slightest. There are players on that team that I respect on some level. You know, I respected Marc-Andre Fleury before he went to Vegas.
In 07-08, he had a fight against Andrew Ferentz. In 09, he had a fight with Brett McLean.
Okay.
Okay, hold on. I'm getting there. We're getting there.
So we've gone through two fights.
09,
a decade ago.
09, Marek Zidlicky.
Yep.
Okay. All right, we're getting there. Hold on. Matt Niskanen in 2010. He's like one fight a year.
Okay.
And then in 2012, it's the Claude Giroux one.
Yeah.
And then 14-15, he fought Brandon Dubinsky.
Yeah, he fought Brandon Dubinsky. Wow, he's a tough guy. What's Brandon Dubinsky, 5'4"?
I'm just saying. He's 5'11", but okay.
Okay, he's 5'11", and what, 140 pounds?
190.
Okay.
You were wrong on both sides of that.
Whatever, man. Brandon Dubinsky is not a tough guy. And look at the guys that Evgeny Malkin's fought.
I just closed the...
Even just Blake Wheeler. Blake Wheeler's what, 6'4", 230? Blake Wheeler's a big, ugly dude.
Blake Wheeler's a hell of a hockey player, though.
I agree, and I respect him, too. But...
I don't respect Malkin at all.
All right, look at the fights he's been in.
Oh, am I really doing this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
2017-2018, Nick Foligno. Yeah, it's a real tough guy there.
Listen, he's better. He's tougher than Brandon Dubinsky.
PK Subban. Okay.
PK Subban can throw.
No,
him.
He can't. 16-17, Blake Wheeler.
Yep.
15-16, Jack Johnson. It's a real. That's a tough guy there. Your whole argument is invalid here.
Okay.
12-13, Travis Hamonic. So I'm not even going to continue looking at this list. That list was a bigger joke than the Crosby list.
Okay.
Crosby's turned into a guy that I do respect. And it kills me to say because we talked about Brodeur being a Flyers killer.
Yeah.
Crosby's 100% a Flyers killer.
Yep.
Like, against the Flyers, he averages over a point a game. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
But I mean, I just respect the hell out of his game because of what he did. The way that he changed the way that he played.
According to you, the Flyers are going to get Carlson this year and we'll be fine.
I don't know if they'll be fine because they still don't have the goaltending. But
And honestly, John Carlson isn't really a shutdown defensive defenseman.
He's a two-way guy. He moves the puck well. He's a two-way guy.
I would argue that he's more offensive than defensive.
No, he's not.
He's not 100-0, right? But I would argue that he edges towards the offensive side. And I don't necessarily know if he's a good fit for this team.
He's a very good fit. He's a veteran. He's been there before. Clearly, he just won the goddamn cup.
Yeah, but it took him this long, so.
I mean, whatever, but how long has it been since the Flyers bowl won?
Okay.
Right? Okay. Sure. So, I think he fits. A guy like Sam Moran has no future on this club, so I don't even want to talk about his name. He's probably not even going to be ready for next year.
Okay.
So, you got an extra spot. Philippe Myers is injury prone. Who else we got? Sanheim is... Like, I still think Sanheim has good potential, but he's still making mistakes.
Sure.
Your
top six next year, you got Provorov and Ghost,
uh-huh.
Sanheim, Hag, Gudas.
I don't want Gudas anywhere near this
team. He's going to be on the team.
No, trade him.
He's going to be on the
trade
team.
Him.
He's going to be on the team. They're not going to trade him. And then McDonald. Those are your six.
Yeah.
Now, maybe Philippe Myers comes up and knocks somebody out. Maybe Sam Marin's healthy, but that doesn't seem like it's going to be the case.
Even if he's healthy, he's not going to make the team.
That might be the case. But you have your top six. Now, if you sign a John Carlson, who's in the press box? Is it Gudas?
Yes. Or McDonald. I mean, they won't do that.
Listen, it's not going to be McDonald.
But yes,
as much as I would love it to be.
Or trade Gudas.
They're not.
You could get something for him.
He's not going to get traded.
Why not?
He's just not. Anyway,
that's
okay.
A good argument.
Well, listen,
he's just not.
You,
but yes, I would put Gudas in the press box.
You fear you don't like the coach. You think he puts young guys in the box too much?
No, I wouldn't even say that. No, that's not my reason for not liking him.
Okay.
No, that's not my reason for not liking him.
Well, that's an argument I've heard. Is that he's
yeah,
he
I've heard that argument too. But
so
if that is to get a bigger picture for like down the road, then I understand it. The timing sometimes is weird with it, but I understand it. In a philosophy sense.
So do you think if John Carlson comes in that Hag and Sanheim are the ones splitting time in the press box?
Probably. I'm fine with that. John Carlson is clearly better than both of those guys.
Okay. But is it worth...
Is it worth
cutting down the development of both of those guys?
Yes, because Hag isn't a top-tier prospect.
I think he's a future top four guy.
No, he's not. He's a top six guy.
I'm not saying he's
best.
There right now, but...
A top six guy at best, so he's probably... either him or Gudas are probably the odd guys out.
There were a lot of games this year where Robert Hag was your second-best defenseman.
I disagree. That's also... easy to say because the defensive core wasn't very good.
I would say,
like, even Provorov, who has the best ceiling out of all of them, had a down season.
I would say over the stretch of the season, Robert Hägg was your third best defenseman. Behind Provorov and Ghost, in some order. Probably Ghost. Ghost, Provorov, Hägg. Over the span of the full season.
Just because Gudas was so bad, McDonald is McDonald. Like, I might say McDonald was the third best because people say he's worse than he is.
He's an AHL player.
No, he's not.
Like, 2 years ago, he literally was.
I mean, sure. But,
like...
It's just he's gotten
worse since then.
Maybe Hägg was the third best, but, like, again, that's not a great group of names.
Okay, but it's not getting any better this year.
It could be if you add John Carlson to that list.
Sure.
Or a Philippe Myers.
So then if you add John Carlson to that list, then Robert Hägg is now your fourth best defenseman.
No, he's not, though. And maybe that's what he played. Gudas have a trade, one. Two, McDonald, I think, is a little better than Hägg.
Okay.
He just is.
You guys can let us know what you think about the future of the Flyers defensive core by finding us on Twitter at YWTPodcast. You can also follow me on Twitter at KCollington and Mike at Mike_Giletto. We definitely want to hear your thoughts about this. Who is the Flyers top six next year? Where do they go? Do they sign John Carlson? What do they do? Let us know on Twitter. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, and LastWordOnSports.com. Everywhere you're just searching, you would think will pop right up.
Yep. And all the right. Next week, we'll probably talk a lot about the draft because the draft's that week.
It's time to go, yeah.
So we'll talk a lot about the draft next week.
Join us next week for our NHL entry draft preview, and we'll see you next week. Because she's literally in bed with the GM.